From Storyflow, this is your daily audio brief for July 7th. Hey, Mason here. July 7th. The opening read 5 stories that explain today's tape. Let's get into it. First, from Bitcoin Data Newsletter. Cycle bottom building blocks. Hello everyone. Bitcoin is bouncing and confidence is rising again. Bearish momentum is slowing, but that does not mean the bear market is over. In this video, we'll go over what building bullish divergences across metrics mean for price, and where I think Bitcoin is most likely to bottom out using price levels and data positioning. Enjoy. Next. Second, from Gregory's newsletter. Lions, 1 year ago we called it, we warned, and now it's here, with more to come. Lions, look at these headlines over the past few days, and there are many more like these. Lions, 1 year ago nearly to the day, I put this video out below for you, warning of this and more to come. Up next. Third, from Capital Flows. The OI Compute Playbook. The first section of today's live stream broke down the OI Compute market and why the financialization of compute is becoming the most important development in the entire OI trade. Main takeaways from the free section. Corporate credit issuance hit $110 billion in June, the strongest month since March and almost double last June, taking year-to-date issuance to $685 billion. That debt is funding factories, data centers, and jobs, so the credit cycle is melting up and the labor data is starting to confirm it. US compute futures and perps are launching into a market where GPU finances already desperately need to lock in prices. This is hedging demand waiting for an instrument, not a speculative product searching for users. 6 ETF issuers have filed preliminary prospectuses for compute futures ETFs before the underlying futures even trade, among the first in history, and the tweet announcing it got 8 retweets. Nobody is watching the market that everyone is about to be forced to watch. GPU residual value is the fault line. GPU financing only became its own asset class in 2023, and the closest precedent is IBM mainframes in the 1970s, where lessors who booked aggressive residuals went bankrupt within months of IBM's price cuts. Underwriting a high-vol asset with low-vol credit is the same mistake Stretch just made, and when credit vol rises faster than equity vol, you get out of the way. The yen carry trade keeps exporting liquidity to the United States, and that borrowed money is buying OI and compute names. As long as Japanese real rates sit below zero, the spring keeps compressing, and the trade unwinds when real rates shift or the Ministry of Finance issues below expectations, not before. You can find the free recording on the OI Compute Playbook here in the YouTube video. The member section connects this framework to the live regime and positioning, with the recording linked at the bottom of this report. Macro decks from today's stream. All slide decks by James. Link tomorrow's stream asks whether a liquidity event is building underneath a market sitting at highs. We will map the signals across the carry trade, credit volatility, and the funding markets that would flag it first. Warm welcome, Tagus community. July 07, 2026 Strategy MSDLR enters new phase, while Michael Saylor's company, Strategy, previously offloaded a miner 32 Bitcoin in May 2026, its latest sale of 3,588 Bitcoin for $216 signals a permanent structural pie. But, fourth, from Tagus Capital. Tagus Bytes 07.07.26. Though some blamed that initial May drop for triggering the Bitcoin plunge, the tiny sale represented less than 0.004% of their stash, an irrelevant fraction compared to broader record US ETF outflows during June, in a large part due to capital rotation to OI infrastructure demand. Tagus Bytes, July 01, 2026. Next, fifth, from Studio Alpha. Innovation is conversion. Innovation rankings make rich countries feel good, but for companies, innovation is not a reputation game. It is the mechanism that keeps them from becoming replaceable. Without innovation, products become commodities, margins compress, customers drift, talent leaves, and yesterday's advantage becomes today's overhead. A CEO's job is not to protect yesterday's advantage until it expires. A CEO's job is to make sure the company can keep creating the next one. If that mechanism is missing, the company may still be managed, but it is no longer being led. That is why this matters. Up next. Sixth, from Holistic Millionaire. The coaching market just hit $4.4 billion and it's still growing at 5% a year. The wellness coaching market isn't slowing down, it's accelerating. Digital health coaching alone is projected to grow at 13% a year through 2035. The clients are there. The money is there. So what's getting in the way? Money Monday. Stop and think about this number for a second. $4.4 billion. That's how much people spent on health and wellness coaching in the US last year. And it keeps growing 4-5% every single year. Online coaching is growing even faster. 13% a year. All the way through 2035. That means more people are looking for help right now than ever before. More people are ready to pay for it. More people are searching for someone like you. And most practitioners are not getting their share of it. That's not your fault, but it is something you can fix. And today we're going to talk about how. Here's what happened. More people than ever started looking for wellness support. Burnout got worse. Anxiety got worse. People stopped wanting to just take a pill and started looking for real help from real people. At the same time, the way people find help changed. They go online. They search. They look at your website. They read what you wrote, and they decide in about 30 seconds whether you're the right person for them or not. The money followed the practitioners who were easy to find, who were clear about who they help, who made it simple for someone to take the next step. If your website is vague, hard to navigate, or sounds like a textbook, you're losing people who were already looking for you. That's the gap, and it has nothing to do with how good you are at your job. This is hard to hear, but it's true. The practitioners making the most money right now are not always the most trained or the most experienced. They are the easiest to find and the clearest about what they do. Word of mouth is wonderful, but it's slow, and it depends on the right person talking to the right person at the right time. The practitioners getting real results from this $4.4 billion market didn't wait for word of mouth. They made sure people could find them. They wrote about their work in plain, simple words. They made it easy for someone to say yes. That's it. The 13% growth in online coaching is not going away. It's real and it's happening right now. People are no longer limited to working with whoever lives nearby. They search online. They find someone who feels right. They book a call. They work together over video. This means your potential clients are not just in your town. They're everywhere. Anyone dealing with the problem you solved anywhere in the country could become your client. The question is not whether to show up online. You have to. The question is whether what people find when they look you up is actually working. For most practitioners, honestly, it isn't. Not because they haven't tried, but because nobody ever taught them what works. Four things come up again and again with practitioners who aren't getting their share of this market. You're not specific enough about who you help. I help people feel better is not enough. I help burned out nurses get their energy back is specific. The more specific you are, the faster the right people find you and the faster they decide you're the one for them. You're using words your clients don't know. Your certifications make sense to other practitioners. Your clients don't know what they mean. They're searching for their problem in plain, everyday words. Write for them, not for your peers. There's no clear next step on your website. Someone lands on your page. They like what they see. Then what? If it's not obvious what to do next, one simple, easy step they'll leave. Add one clear call to action. Book a free call. Download a guide. Something simple. You're not following up. Most people need to hear from you more than once before they're ready to say yes. If someone reaches out and you respond once and then go quiet, you're losing clients who were almost ready. A simple 2 or 3 email follow-up can change everything. None of this is hard. It's just stuff nobody taught you. Growing your practice takes investment. A better website. Better tools. Maybe some help with your marketing. That costs money. Most practitioners pay for all of it out of their own pocket. Which means it either doesn't happen or it happens really slowly. But here's something most practitioners don't know. There is real funding out there for women-owned, service-based businesses like yours. Grants. Money you apply for, receive, and never have to pay back. No loan. No giving up part of your business. Just capital to help you grow. This market is not going to wait. The practitioners moving fastest are using every resource available to them, including money most of their peers have never thought to look for. The market is $4.4 billion and getting bigger. People are actively searching for what you do. And then, 7th, from Bloomberg Economics. Israel set to cut rates on strong shekel and enduring ceasefire. Israel's central bank is set to cut interest rates for a second straight meeting as a strong currency and moderate inflation expectations outweigh an anticipated pickup in growth and shift toward more restrictive policy in the US and Europe. Next, 8th, from Bloomberg Economics. Johannesburg sees path to ratings upgrade from Moody's outlook. Moody's placed a positive outlook on Johannesburg's credit rating, opening a path to an upgrade if the city tightens up its governance. The municipality has been teetering on the edge of fiscal distress, with cash flow gaps and service backlogs that have rattled investors for months. Officials say they'll lean into the rating agency's signal, targeting better budgeting, clearer procurement rules, and more transparent reporting to meet the upgrade criteria. If they pull it off, borrowing costs could ease and the city's bond spreads may narrow, giving a modest lift to the broader South African municipal market. Keep an eye on the next municipal bond issuance for any early signs of improvement. Up next, 9th, from Zero Hedge, Chinese national madam indicted for running brothels out of Boston apartments. Authored by Frank Fang via The Epoch Times, a Chinese national living in New York has been indicted for allegedly running a sex trafficking ring out of several residential brothels located in Boston's Allston and Brighton neighborhoods. Liu Xinxin, 40, of the Flushing neighborhood of Queens, was arrested in New York on July 1, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of Massachusetts announced on July 2. Liu, who also goes by the name of Bella, was indicted on June 24 on one count of knowingly persuading an individual to travel in interstate commerce to engage in prostitution and three counts of use of facilities of interstate or foreign commerce in aid of racketeering enterprises. Prosecutors said Lilu's alleged activities spanned 11 months, beginning in August 2025, during which she allegedly recruited women via foreign national middlemen. The women came from several countries, including China, Japan, the Philippines, and Vietnam. The women would engage in commercial sex acts at apartments that Lilu obtained through fraud via either altered or forged documents, according to prosecutors. The indictment identifies several addresses, including 365 Western Ave in Brighton, 83 Gardner St. in Allston, and 50 Hitchborn St. in Brighton. In October 2025, an FBI task force carried out an operation targeting a website known for commercial sex listings, according to an affidavit, and identified a phone number that an agent acting in an undercover capacity called to negotiate a price of $600 for a sex act. The agent was then told to go to the Gardner Street address. Before the FBI's undercover operation, the Boston Police Department had become aware of both the Western Avenue and Gardner Street addresses. According to the affidavit, after receiving an anonymous tip in August 2025, Boston police investigated both locations. Nobody answered the door, but officers reported hearing people running, whispering, and moving furniture inside. At Gardner Street, a resident complained to Boston police officers about men entering the building and going to the apartment on a regular basis, and that Asian women entered the apartment late at night, the affidavit states. When the FBI undercover agent arrived at the Gardner Street location, an Asian woman who answered the door was dressed in only a bra and underwear, according to the affidavit. Inside the residence, the FBI task force found a living room with boxes of Kleenex and paper towels stacked to the ceiling, along with two bedrooms, each containing a bed and a nightstand topped with bottles of lubricant and rolls of toilet paper. The woman who answered the door told the FBI through an interpreter that she was from Japan and had traveled to Flushing, where friends told her to call a phone number to make money, according to the affidavit. The call connected her to Liu, the boss, whom she knew as Bella. Liu then directed her to Boston and arranged dates for her. The Gardner Street apartment continued to serve as a hub for commercial sex after the FBI task force's operation, the affidavit said. It is estimated that there were 51 suspected sex buyers at the location from Oct. 31, 2025 to Nov. 2, 2025, based on surveillance footage, generating about $40,000 for the brothel. The FBI task force, the Boston police, and the Massachusetts State Police executed a search warrant for the Gardner Street apartment on Nov. 9, 2025. According to the affidavit, they encountered two sex buyers and three naked or nearly naked Asian females and seized nearly $15,000 in cash. Two of the females, speaking through an interpreter, said they came from Japan and that they kept only about half of the money from their dates, while the rest would go to Bella. The FBI task force carried out a similar operation in May. Inside an apartment at the Hitchborn Street address, agents encountered three females, one from Japan and two from Vietnam. One had bruises on her knees, legs, and feet that, according to the affidavit, were caused by sex buyers. They were not allowed to leave the apartment, The affidavit states, referring to the three females, as for how they had arrived at the apartment, one female said she had travelled to China, the Philippines, and New York to work at Liu's alleged sex operation, while another said she had travelled from Canada to New York before taking a Chinese Uber to Boston, according to the affidavit. Liu is a member of a sophisticated criminal organization with international ties, one that recruits and facilitates the travel of foreign nationals for the purpose of engaging in commercial sex, the affidavit states. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has stated that the decisive phase of Russia's invasion of Ukraine has shifted from land and sea to the air, making the battle in the sky the determining factor of the war. At a moment, Russia has begun to experience a fuel shortage crisis in many locales due to vital energy infrastructure having been struck again and again by inbound suicide drones. In total, U.S. authorities seized about $105,000 in cash during their investigation of Liu, the U.S. And then, 10th, from Zero Hedge, Zelensky touts battle in the sky as key to winning asymmetric fight with Russia. Speaking to the Financial Times, Zelensky emphasized that the question of seizing territory now holds far less significance because Ukraine has entered the aerial sphere and has unleashed serious damage on Russian territory. The Kremlin has all the while maintained that its forces are advancing in the east, but Zelensky is suggesting this doesn't matter anymore as Ukraine has pivoted to asymmetric warfare. Today I believe victory in this war belongs to whoever is smarter. If you stop the enemy on the battlefield, if you stop the war on land, and if you deny him dominance at sea as we did with our naval drones, driving the Russian fleet away, then the next battlefield becomes the sky, he said in the FT interview published Monday. Zelensky described that it matters far less whose territory is larger and that we have moved into the air domain. And in the air, we are already competitive. Russia is in the meantime close to achieving its goal of pacifying the four eastern annexed territories. Zelensky, who will also be on the ground in Ankara, further told FD, if our partners do not abandon Ukraine financially, if our soldiers continue holding the front, if every kilometer of Russian advance continues to cost them tens of thousands and sometimes hundreds of thousands of personnel, then the decisive struggle will take place in the skies. The remarks are clearly timed to appeal to Ukraine's successes against Russia during the same week the major annual NATO summit kicks off in Turkey, with President Trump and other world leaders expected. Because the skies will determine the outcome of this war. President Trump has meanwhile newly claimed that the end of the Ukraine war is closer than most people think. However, the two sides are not even close to getting representatives at the same table. We are negotiating and we'll see if we can put an end to it. Another record strike by Ukraine's long-range drone arsenal, record distance strike. Ukraine hit Omsk oil refinery, the largest in Russia, located 2,700 km from Ukrainian territory. pic.twitter.com/helikaabzos/report@clashripper. July 6, 2026. I think we are much closer than people think, Trump continued. The president was questioned Monday on why Russia's Putin doesn't feel more pressure when the two talk, to which Trump replied, I think he really feels pressure. He wants to put an end to this, and Ukraine wants to put an end to this. President Putin wants this to end. I'll tell you that very firmly. And President Zelensky really wants this to end now. He added, we will succeed, while affirming that this will be higher on the agenda at the NATO summit. The White House has been signaling a possible pivot back to a head-on diplomatic push to find an end to the conflict in Ukraine, which is now at its fifth year. The Iran ceasefire in the meantime appears to be holding, for now. That's the read. Watch the tape, ignore the noise. Back tomorrow.